Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC, with the Restaurant Guys.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us through WCTCAM or RestaurantGuysRadio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Morning there, Marky.
Hey, Francis, how are you?
I'm just grand, thank you. I have to say, I had a little donut this morning on my way to work.
Donuts are awesome.
Not this one.
I have to say, you want to talk about indulgences? You want to talk about why I'm the size I am?
Yeah.
Donuts are almost the perfect food. They are. Oh, okay.
I think you're going a little far.
You're going to fry bread and put jelly in it. Yeah. Okay? Really? And sometimes you're going to put chocolate on top? What's better than that?
Yep.
A little pudding in the middle.
I have to say I'm not a huge fan of the average donut.
I agree. I don't like you know, box donuts, or I like bakery donuts.
Well, I this comes up because I had read just recently, and we haven't been there, but I want to go. Of course, you introduced me to the famous Italian donut called the bomboloni, which is a perfect little fried bit of dough that's better than almost any American donut. And there is a place called Bomboloni that opened in New York just on March 17th.
In March, right.
Yeah, on St. Patrick's Day. It's at 187 Columbus Avenue, which is at 68th Street. It's called Bomboloni. And if you've never had a bomboloni, they're remarkable.
Yeah, they're
fresh
cool
donuts with a little bit of cream in them or a little bit of jelly. They're beautiful.
We're so jaded, I think, with the Dunkin' Donuts, the par-baked donuts that was cooked someplace else, or I'm sorry, that was made someplace else and then finished in the little donut shop. They're everywhere. You can have a Dunkin' Donut or a muffin at Dunkin' Donuts.
Yeah, those kind of donuts are to real donuts what Chips Ahoy is to your mom's chocolate chip cookie.
That's exactly right. And, you know, obviously, as people have cut costs and ingredients have changed, even they are not what they were 20 years ago.
Well, you know, that's the thing. I used to love Dunkin' Donuts, and I don't think it's just that my palate has changed, but the chocolate icing on them was different. The texture of the donut was different, less stable, but if you got it when it was fresh, it was delicious, and the coffee in Dunkin' Donuts was even different.
Yeah, I had a donut from someplace else, like a supermarket bakery recently, and the chocolate on top, instead of being actual chocolate that would melt, they didn't want to make it the donut to make a mess. So they put like this chocolate wax stuff on top that refused to melt.
Mm, that's really bad.
And, you know, one of the things we've talked about a lot on the show is one of the pleasures you get from something like chocolate is that it changes texture in your mouth.
Yeah, textural dynamic.
Well, if you have one of those chocolates that won't melt, and it's not chocolate, obviously, but you have one of those chocolate-flavored substances that won't change texture in your mouth.
Basically, it's brown Velveeta is what you're saying.
It's worse than Velveeta. Velveeta actually, you know, at some point will change texture. And I was just like, you know, you really messed this up. This thing that would have been pleasurable, you really messed up.
Do you remember when you used to go into a fast food restaurant and you could order a milkshake?
Mm-hmm.
I defy you to go into a restaurant and order a milkshake or to find milkshake listed anywhere. You can get a thick shake. You can get a shake, but you can't get a milkshake. And I think the last time I had a thick shake from a fast food restaurant was probably about a dozen years ago. And what I found disturbing about it was that I had put it down on the counter, and an hour later I came back.
And it refused to melt.
It was still thick. Yeah. It was room temperature, but it was thick. And I thought to myself, oh, I don't want. Mr. Softy also is another one. Mr. Softy ice cream trucks.
Uh-huh.
Can't do them anymore. Had a cone. Didn't melt. I'm talking. It's a hot day. I'm like,
it's got to melt.
Why is this melting?
I mean, here's what I don't understand about that.
By the way,
don't sue
me because it did melt eventually. It just didn't melt enough in the right way.
I understand the logic of, hey, we need to make this shelf stable. We need to make this so that you can drive around town and in a 100-degree day and it won't melt. I understand all that, but there's got to be a recognition that the pleasure of chocolate, the pleasure of ice cream, the pleasure of substances like that, of an Italian ice, is that they indeed melt.
Well, and
that's part of the pleasure of it.
I am always surprised the level to which we will accept, not you and I, but people in general. When I was a kid, the standardization of food to make things easier, the level of sacrifice of why you would have it in the first place. I'm sorry, but just those sorts of donuts just aren't worth the pleasure. They're not that good. Mm-hmm. They're not worth the calories. Whereas I think if you're on Columbus Avenue and you stop in for a bomboloni at Bomboloni, worth the calories, worth the extra few minutes at the gym. You know, it seems to be donut month here, but Bon Appetit magazine came out with their best places for donuts across America.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, obviously donuts have a...
Road trip.
Totally love it. Well, obviously donuts have a place in our collective subconscious, you know, or in our collective consciousness about it. It's very much comfort food. It's very much a treat when we were a kid. But just because it's round and has a hole in it doesn't mean that it's a donut and you should
eat
it.
I have a great idea for the road trip from mm-hmm. donut place to donut place across the country.
Yeah.
You should have to jog to each one in between.
It'd really be worthwhile. So we have in New York, and I haven't been to this place, our selection from Bon Appetit magazine is the Donut Plant. It's an artisanal donut boom traced back to Mark Israel's Lower East Side place. The classic glazed and tres leches cake donuts are perfection. Even the jellies in the trademark jelly-filled square donuts are house-made. That's 379 Grand Street in New York City.
Do you know that the jelly in most of these jelly donuts that you get, the gooey kind of jelly that doesn't really seem like jelly,
yeah.
Do you know that that's a powder mix? That the jelly is actually a powder mix and the gelatin's in there and a lot of these jelly.
So when it bakes, it jellifies a little?
No, you still put the jelly in later, but it's a powder mix. And so you mix it, so you get the powder mix, it sits on the shelf for however long you need it, and then you mix it with water and the gelatin and then you put it in the donut and yuck!
My life is poor for knowing
yuck.
That fact. My life is poor. Well, I don't think that's how they do it at the Donut Plant in New York.
I'll bet they don't.
We have a big listenership out in Chicago. I want to give the choice out there is Dat Donuts, D-A-T Donuts. Every donut at this South Side joint is made by hand. Purists will like the raised glazed donuts, available in supersized versions as well, while cream-filled center devotees must have the Boston cream. That's at 8249 South Cottage Grove Avenue in Chicago. I want to comment on something that is really also sad to me. Even in Bon Appetit magazine, and at many of these places in their names, donuts are now D-O-N-U-T-S. We've lost the donuts.
We've lost the dough. We've lost the dough in donuts.
I really don't like that. And I want to.
They're do-nuts instead of donuts.
I want to throw in name in the hat for contention for New Jersey. There is a little place in South Jersey, central, like this mid-Jersey shore. Just off the mid-Jersey shore in Toms River, New Jersey. And I'm not sure if they're open all year round. But it's right off Route 37. It's not right in the shore town. It's sort of on your way to the shore town. It's Mrs. Obko's Old Fashioned Donuts, fried cakey donuts made uh-huh. fresh every day. Make them in the morning. Get there early because when she runs out, she runs out. Mrs. Obko's Donuts, Toms River, New Jersey.
Got to go for the real deal. I'm sorry. Got to go for the real deal. If you're going to have a donut. You gotta go for the real deal.
Hey, listen, we'll be back in just a moment. We're going to be talking about more adult topics. We're going to be talking about cocktails and cocktail books with Greg Bohm. He's reproducing some wonderful old antique cocktail books that you should check out. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys on WCTC-AM and RestaurantGuysRadio.com. Hey there, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis, The Restaurant Guys, and we're here talking today with Greg Bohm. Greg Bohm owns Mud Puddle Books. You may not have heard of Mud Puddle Books, but they fill a real need in the cocktail world. They issue reproductions of classic cocktail books, things, resources that were unavailable online or anywhere to bartenders. Everybody I know who's in the cocktail business knows about Mud Puddle Books, and if you have a serious cocktail enthusiast in your family, you need to go there.
Greg, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Mud Puddle Books. I remember, Greg, when I started in the cocktail business, I had been a bartender for a number of years, owned my own place for less than a year, and I had the great good fortune to meet Dale DeGroff, sort of the founder of the modern cocktail revolution. And I was amazed by when he schooled me in cocktails, because I didn't think cocktails could be really complex. I was sort of a wine snob. And then I was amazed once again after we became friends, and he took me into his little office stacked with out-of-print cocktail books, hard-to-find cocktail books, things I'd never heard of.
Historical cocktail books that were 50, 100 years old.
And, you know, having had the privilege to be able to go into Dale's office and read through some of those things, or to be able to call up my friend Dale when I had a question and he could verify things historically for me in books, one of the surprising things is these books did not become reavailable. They're not always accurately quoted on the web. Good information is still somewhat hard to find. And then you come out with Mud Puddle Books. What was your motivation? Where did you come from? How did you find a love for this particular genre of book?
Well, my family's been in book publishing for three generations. So we were publishing books at Sterling Publishing Company, which was our family business, by a guy named Salvatore Calabresi.
Sure.
And actually, you mentioned Dale DeGroff. The first time I met him was we brought Salvatore Calabresi over from London for an event at the Rainbow Room, hosted by Dale DeGroff, for the book launch of Salvatore's classic cocktail book. So that was my first entree into this world, was through the book side of it. And that book, first of all, sold incredibly well. And I would go to Salvatore's bar in London probably twice a year, each time for a week, and just sit at his bar in the Lanesboro Hotel called the Library Bar and have wonderful cocktails. And 10, 11 years ago, it was not easy to find a great cocktail in New York City.
Right.
So being a book geek, I turned to books and started collecting cocktail books. At that time, the books were more pieces of history. Somebody like Dale DeGroff would know what to do or about with some of the ingredients that he couldn't find or what they were. Most people didn't. I didn't have access to most of the ingredients in these old cocktail books 10 or 11 years ago. So they weren't really useful. They were fun, but they weren't useful. And now everything's changed with the amount of bitters you can find. If you can't find an ingredient, look it up on the Internet, and there'll be a recipe on how to make it. And so these books, which were once not terribly useful, have become actually useful. So it made sense for us to publish.
Well, you know, one of the things that I find very interesting about cocktail recipes and cocktail books, you know, recipes for pastry are best adhered to exactingly. You know, pastry is chemistry, but recipes for cocktails are like recipes for savory food. I think that with good bartenders, you know, there are adjustments made all the time for the level of sweetness or the level of tartness, and there are adjustments made with the sensibility of the fact that 100 years ago people had a sweeter palate than we have now, and there are adjustments made with the idea that maybe a lot of bar recipes weren't completely accurate or spirits may have changed over time. So it still takes, to read an old cocktail book, it still takes, you need to bring a fair amount to the table. But like you said, those cocktails can be reproduced reasonably today, and it's how individual bartenders interpret those recipes that, you know, makes life interesting, I think.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely, when you read the books, if you just make the recipes out of the books, that's going to be, it may not always be successful, but we're very careful in what books we do publish. In my office, I have 2,800 antique cocktail books.
Wow.
And we've so far done reproductions of 12 of them. And not because we couldn't do more, it's just that we've chosen ones. The first group we did were books like by Harry Johnson and Jerry Thomas that had great historical value and great bartender advice from a time when bartending was a very respected profession, and that's been lost. It's not, now it's back again, but this kind of bartenders that needed a role model, we published these books so they could read about role models. Granted, they're from the late 1800s, but made sense. And then the second six books we published were books that were full of recipes, so people could read about pre-prohibition recipes and see what they're all about. But yes, you do have to have a good amount of knowledge to dive into these books, because some of the booze has changed and some of the people's palates have changed, certainly.
Greg, when you're republishing these books, are you re-editing them at the same time, or are you publishing them exactly as they were produced?
Exact replicas. In fact, we do such exact replicas that when you go and look on eBay and I see one of my own books, I have to actually look at the listing very carefully before I buy it, think I'm buying an original. I mean, it's every single detail from the binding, the paper, stamping on the cover, if it has gold on it. We are doing exact replicas. The only thing we're adding is an introduction. So by people like David Wondrich Ted, you know, Dr. Cocktail, Ted Haig, and Dale DeGroff has been one of our introductions. So to kind of bridge between modern times and when these books are written, people can see what the value is. But other than the introduction, they're identical.
Who is the audience for these books? Who's buying them? I mean, it's in the blogosphere, the cocktail blogosphere is very much alive with people who are interested both professionally and people who just, you know, are cocktail enthusiasts at home. Who's buying these books?
Our main business is selling barware books and bitters to high-end cocktail bars. That being said, a full half our business is going to cocktail enthusiasts, geeks, and also because of some press we've gotten, like GQ called our books last year the fifth best, it was stuff of the year, fifth best stuff of the year. Number one was a new Mercedes, and number five was Mud Puddle Books cocktail book.
That's great. It's
so
a lot
that's
cheaper.
That it was great because people who weren't normally going to be our customer would find out about our products. But as of now, it's also a lot of people from the culinary world, a lot of chefs, bartenders, definitely, but also a lot of chefs and cocktail enthusiasts.
Well, for the collector, do you ever sell any of the antique books?
I do. I don't formally sell antique books, but if I have multiple copies don't help anybody. So I definitely, if somebody's using it for a specific reason, if they're doing research or something, my office is actually a working library. So there are 2,800 cocktail books, and both journalists, bartenders, different people who are doing research come through here all the time. So you'll see, you know, we just had a bunch of bartenders in from Germany, and they were going to PDT because it's a great cocktail bar. Death & Company was their favorite cocktail bar. And on their itinerary, they would come by here to see the books and do a little bit of research.
Wow.
So in other words, you'll sell one of these antique books as long as it goes to a good home.
Correct, yes. As long as I have a multiple copies, which is often the case, and yes, if it's in a good home, certainly we'll consider it.
Kind of like giving away puppies. Hey, we'll take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Greg Bohm of Mud Puddle Books. You can find Greg's books at cocktailkingdom.com, and we also have some pretty cool barware and historical reference points that I think you'll find interesting. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys on WCTC-AM and restaurantguysradio.com.
Let me talk to you about lighting, and specifically about how you can enhance the appeal of any space. Lighting is a powerful, emotional, and aesthetic force. It's one of the most important elements of design. More than anything else, it sets the mood and tone for an entire experience. A room pops or it doesn't based on lighting. Lights on 9 is a top-notch commercial and retail lighting supplier. Lights on 9 supplied all the lights for our award-winning Catherine Lombardi restaurant, inside and out, dining room and kitchen. Lights on 9 has everything from tasteful and stylish chandeliers to table and floor lamps, to outdoor lighting for illuminating a building or walkway or a sign. At Lights on 9, the service is exemplary, expert, and knowledgeable. They ship anywhere in the continental United States for free. Their retail store is in the Galleria Shopping Center on Route 9 in Manalapan. They're open 7 days a week. Call them at 732-308-9166. That's 732-308-9166. Or visit them at lightson9.com. That's lightson9.com.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome back. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis, and we're talking with Greg Bohm. Greg is the owner of Mud Puddle Books, which is in the process of reprinting classic cocktail books that have been off the market for many, many years. And I think it's a great service to those of us in the industry, and is a really fascinating thing if you're interested in cocktails at all. You can find them at cocktailkingdom.com. Now, Greg, that's your website, but it's not just about books at cocktailkingdom.com. You sell barware as well?
That's correct. We sell barware that's pretty much super high-end barware that comes mostly from Japan, Germany, and the UK, as well as bitters from all over the world.
And why don't you talk about the difference between some of the barware you might get in from your website as opposed to what you might get from traditional barware?
The concepts are the same. It's shakers, strainers, but everything's just a tool just a little bit better. So one of my favorite things is the three-part cobbler shaker, which is traditionally not considered a great shaker in this country. We sell ones made in Japan that all the Tokyo bartenders use, for example, that are extremely well-tooled. They won't leak. They're easy to separate. We have all different types of bar spoons that are more delicate. They're more elegant both in appearance and things that are until we started Cocktail Kingdom, were almost impossible to find, like bitters decanters. So they're 90 milliliter bottles, that's about 3 ounces. And you can put bitters into these bottles so you get an accurate dash, because the commercial bitters bottles, like the Angostura bottle or Bitter Truth, which is another brand of cocktail bitters, are not consistent. The bottles are all different from each other. So you can decant into this nice, it's very elegant bitters bottle to get a more accurate dash each time.
Well, you know, one of the early bars that I love in New York City was opened up when I still had my apartment down in the East Village. It's called Angel's Share.
And that was certainly influential and a great cocktail bar.
Oh, it's fabulous bar, and it opened, God, I moved out of New York in the 90s, you know, so, or the 90s. So
it opened in 1996, I think?
Yeah, that was the same year that I moved out, was that when they opened, and I still go back there once in a while. The thing about it is, that is a Japanese bar, it's sort of behind a hidden door in a Japanese restaurant, and they practice a different style of bartending, and when you talk about there being Japanese bar tools, I remember thinking, you know, being confronted with Japanese bar tools and the Japanese methods of bartending, there are slight differences other than just higher quality. So, for example, an American bar spoon, you would bend a little bit so you can stir in a certain way, whereas a Japanese bar spoon wouldn't bend. And so there's a different way that you stir, and there's a different way to shake, and there's a whole different methodology there behind Japanese bartending, which is fascinating, that I was first introduced to there. But you're very involved in publishing a book on Japanese cocktail technique just coming up, aren't you?
Yeah, that's correct. The most famous bartender in Japan by far, by leaps and bounds, is a guy named Kazuo Ueda, U-I-E-D-A. And he actually created one of the shakes you're referring to called the hard shake. Not that all Japanese bartenders use the hard shake. At Angel's Share, there's one guy there named Shige, who's a bartender who uses the hard shake. Other ones use different ones. And we're actually flying Mr. Ueda into New York for his book launch and an event at the beginning of May. And the book's called Cocktail Technique, which is a famous book in Japan, and it's the first time it'll be available in English, really explaining how Japanese bartending is different, how they stir differently, like you said. I mean, their mixing glasses are beautiful, which you would have seen at Angel's Share, but also, as you mentioned, the way they stir is different, and this is kind of a glimpse into that whole world.
Well, and when you do this launch, is this open to the public?
Yeah, it is. I mean, if you go to our website, there's information about it. But it's a two-day event all day, and you'll learn a little bit. Day one's about general Japanese cocktail techniques, and day two is kind of the master Ueda's secret techniques, and everything from his hard shake, and also in day one they're going to talk about how to carve ice balls, and all the different techniques. So, yeah, if you go to our website, all the information on the event is there, and it is open to the public.
Sounds like a blast. You can find out more information about that if you go to our website, restaurantguysradio.com, we'll certainly link you up. Or you can go right to cocktailkingdom.com and find out more. Hey, Greg, thanks for being on the show with us.
All right, thank you so much for having me.
Thanks, Greg.
We'll be right back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys on WCTC-AM and restaurantguysradio.com.
Hi, this is Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants and also of the Restaurant Guys radio show. You know, one of the best things about the restaurant business is the creative side of it. Coming up with big ideas and then turning those concepts into reality is awesome. It's what I love most about what I do. But it can't stop there. If you can't communicate exactly what it is you're doing, then you'll find yourself standing alone in your dining room, just you and your big ideas. The Mardini Group can help you get your ideas across to others. The Mardini Group is a boutique graphic design firm, and they do extraordinary work. We use them, and as you know, we only use the best. Whether it's menu design, product packaging, a corporate report, promo material, a homepage, or an awesome logo for a brand new project like Catherine Lombardi, we turn to the Mardini Group. Some small business owners don't realize how important it is to have a strong visual identity. Without it, you come across as less than professional. That can cost you trust, and that lowers your bottom line. First impressions count for a lot, and that's why you need the Mardini Group. Go to restaurantguysradio.com and click on the Mardini Group link, or call them at 718-694-9944. The Mardini Group for graphic design, 718-694-9944.
Hey everybody, welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis.
Francis, a lot of these books that Greg's talking about, a lot of these that he's brought back, simply aren't available. I mean, if you're not a collector, if you're not somebody, you know, you want to get the Policeman's Gazette from 1908 and you want to find those documents, there's really one place you can go find it. It's at his library.
Yeah.
That's in Manhattan.
Or Dale's library. That's the thing about a lot of these guys who sort of led the cocktail revolution. They painstakingly found this information. They didn't like Google it in 1996. They went and they found this information. They found these old books. And then they reinterpreted them to make something that, you know, we could drink in modern times.
But one of the things that Greg's that's really cool, and I think that really Greg's really open to people coming and seeing these books. He's not just a collector. He's sharing these collections.
Yeah, it's his library. Library.
You know, we talked about the republishing of some of these books, but at the same time, he's got this 2,800 book collection where you can make an appointment if you're, you know, somebody in the industry, somebody who's serious yeah. about this, and go and do research like a library, and he'll go there with you and open this library up to you. And I think that's really amazing. I think of all the things he's doing, that's the coolest thing that he's doing.
Restores our faith in cocktail humanity. Anyway, well, we hope that you've enjoyed this last hour with the Restaurant Guys. I know that we certainly have. I am Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are the Restaurant Guys on WCTC AM and RestaurantGuysRadio.com.